And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, www.freakradio.org, on Thursday, August 20th. And before we get started in the news and announcements, I want to let you know that you should probably have a pencil and paper, some means of inscription handy, just in case there's something you want to write down for later. Web addresses, emails, telephone numbers, regular old addresses, anything could come up that you might want to act upon later, so have some way of writing it down. Let's start off with announcements. The Southeast U.S. Genetically Engineered Trees Action Camp will be happening from the 24th to the 27th of September in North Carolina. And this is from the Global Justice Ecology Project, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Participation is free, and food and board will be provided, but space is limited, and the application deadline is coming up. U.S. South is ground zero for genetically engineered trees, and now more than ever, we need to come together to save native forests and stop GE trees. The Global Justice Ecology Project has been organizing to stop GE trees in the South for the last few years, and now we need your help. We have collaborated with activists and groups in the region like the Dogwood Alliance and Indigenous Environmental Network to build momentum against genetically engineered trees. This action camp is both the culmination of that work and the beginning of the next stage of our organizing in the South. Participants of the action camp will be given an overview of the current state of genetically engineered trees with a focus on the United States South. And you'll get training in organizing, direct action, blockades, your rights as protesters, how to use media and art in protests, and among other critical topics. The goal of the training is to get you immediately and directly to use your skills and knowledge gained at the action camp in protests and organizing against genetically engineered trees. And here's if you would like to take part in the action camp, you can apply by going online to globaljusticeecology.org/apply-action-camp. Once again, globaljusticeecology.org/apply-action-camp. And once again, the Southeast U.S. Genetically Engineered Trees Action Camp, September 24th through the 27th in North Carolina. And I'll be reading that one again. So if you missed it this week and you didn't catch it on the podcast, well, you can tune in next week. Here's a special alert from the Buffalo Field Campaign in memory of Rosalie Little Thunder. On August 9th, 2014, just a little over a year ago, Lakota elder Rosalie Little Thunder, co-founder of the Buffalo Field Campaign, passed away. A true warrior, she was our guide, hero, inspiration, and friend. After a year of mourning, people will soon come together to pay tribute to Rosalie and celebrate her life. And there's a video on the webpage that is a contribution to her invaluable work and commitment to the Buffalo, and will be shown at the gathering. Many thanks to Buffalo Field Campaign's Mike Meese and Anthony Burkholz for putting together this powerful glimpse into the passion of this most powerful woman. Remind yourself every morning, every morning, every morning, I'm going to do something. I've made a commitment, not for yourself, but beyond yourself. You belong to the collective. Don't go wandering off or you will perish. A quote from Rosalie Little Thunder. In her honor and for the Buffalo, there's a couple of actions that the Buffalo Field Campaign is asking you to take right now. Submit letters to the editor and your local media in support of the Buffalo Field Campaign's alternative to manage wild bison like wild elk in Montana, the only alternative that respects wild buffalo and their right to roam in their home. And two, help change the status quo for wild buffalo by urging your members of Congress to support Buffalo's Field Campaign's alternative to manage wild bison like wild elk in Montana. Thank you for being with us for the buffalo. You can find out more information and watch that video at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. That's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. On their webpage, they have numerous ideas for supporting the Buffalo Field Campaign. And when you get some of that together, send it to the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at area code 406-646-0070. And all this and more information can be found at the Buffalo Field Campaign's website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And please remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And there's a new California wolf pack, and the first time ever. And this story by Kimberly Baker of the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Shasta Pack of Northern California is a family of 7 gray wolves, 2 adults, and 5 pups. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife has just released photos of the pack, which are all dark in color. The pups appear to be a few months old and are approximately 35 to 40 pounds already. California Department of Fish and Wildlife had set up additional trail cameras after earlier photographs recorded a single wolf in May and July. More photographs and video of the Shasta Pack are expected next week. The world-famous lone Oregon wolf, OR7, had made California part of his home range for 4 years. He was the first confirmed wolf in the state since 1924. He and his family of 3 new pups, 2 yearlings, and mate, the Rogue Pack, are currently residing in the Rogue Siskiyou National Forest in Oregon. In anticipation of wolves returning to the Golden State, and the Environmental Protection Information Center worked to see the gray wolf listed as endangered under the California Endangered Species Act. In June of last year, the California Fish and Game Commission voted in favor of listing. This is also the day that the first pups to OR7 were confirmed. The gray wolf continues to be listed in California under the Federal Endangered Species Act. Therefore, it is illegal to harass, harm, pursue, or engage in any such conduct. Now that we have an official wolf pack, regulations and enforcement of the protection of wolves is paramount. The California Draft Wolf Management Plan is expected to be released for public comment this year. The Environmental Protection Information Center has put in hundreds of hours as stakeholder with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and many others to draft the plan. The draft plan has since gone through peer review and is currently being updated to include the new Shasta Pack information. Please stay tuned for more updates and the opportunity to comment on the California Wolf Plan later this year. For more information, go to www.wildcalifornia.org. That's www.wildcalifornia.org. And hundreds of thousands of Columbia Snake River Basin fish have been killed by hot water this summer. The big story so far this summer is the devastating hot water fish kills on the Columbia and Snake Rivers and their tributaries. An unusually low snowpack this winter, combined with unusually warm temperatures in the Northwest this spring and summer, to create the perfect storm for cold water fish like wild salmon and steelhead. Add to this already lethal mix big federal dams, especially the 4 on the lower Snake River, and an already grim situation gets even worse. The slackwater reservoirs created by these dams slow the current and create huge pools that absorb sunlight and drive water temperatures even higher. Back in July, scientists estimated that hundreds of thousands of returning adult fish, particularly sockeye salmon in the Columbia and Snake Rivers, were dead and dying. Some have suggested that we could lose more than 1 million by summer's end. Water temperatures exceeding 70 degrees stress salmon and steelhead. The hotter the water gets, the greater the stress. This results in weakened immune systems, halted migration, increased susceptibility to disease, reduced reproductive success, and eventually death. While these high temperatures are unusual, they are not unexpected. And scientists anticipate that the warming climate will over time make these sorts of summers more frequent, more intense, and longer lasting. Bad news for salmon and all that they rely on their healthy populations. People, orcas, bears, eagles, and a myriad of other fish and wildlife all rely on salmon and steelhead. But the National Marine Fisheries Service and other federal agencies have ignored this reality for far too long and have produced salmon plan after salmon plan that merely tinkers in the margins rather than addressing the dams and dam operations that exacerbate these high temperatures. As a result, the region finds itself ill-equipped to deal with the devastating effects of these conditions this summer. The changing climate is one of the reasons that salmon and fishing advocates have focused on restoring salmon and steelhead's productive access to the immense protected high-elevation habitat in central Idaho especially, but also in eastern Washington and Oregon. Removing the lower Snake River dams is becoming more urgent for restoring healthy Snake River populations and protecting them from extinction. Like its predecessors, the federal government's latest salmon plan for the Columbia Basin does virtually nothing to anticipate, respond to, or mitigate for hot water, made worse by the main stem dams on the Columbia and Snake Rivers. In court recently, arguing over the lawfulness of the 2014 federal plan, the federal attorneys called the freshwater impacts of climate change too speculative to address in detail in their latest plan. And as a result, the agencies included no measures specifically targeted to mitigate for warm water. The fish kills this summer highlight another of the plan's shortcomings, its unrealistically rosy assumptions. Though the government plans have misspent billions of taxpayer and bill-payer dollars, Endangered Species Act listed fish populations remain at risk. Not one of the 13 populations have recovered, and some Snake River populations have declined in recent years. This plan assumes ocean conditions no worse than in recent years, deep snowpacks and mild summer temperatures, so when summer 2015 arrives, there's no buffer or slack or room for error in these critically endangered populations. This summer lays bare a grossly inadequate plan as it puts salmon extinction front and center on the table. The Northwest can have clean, affordable energy and healthy wild salmon populations, but the dam agencies and their allies so far continue to stand in the way. The court's ruling on the 2014 federal salmon plan for the Columbia and Snake Rivers could be issued later this summer or fall. Please stay tuned for more information here on the Earth First Update, or you could go to www.wildsalmon.org. That's www.wildsalmon.org for more information. And the Berryessa Snow Mountain National Monument is a reality. On July 10th, President Obama established the Berryessa Snow Mountain National Monument that encompasses over 330,000 acres of Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management land in Napa, Yolo, Solano, Lake Colusa, and Glenn counties. President Obama's decision to protect the area under the Antiquities Act, a law that American presidents have been using to protect federal land since 1906, is the culmination of 5 years of support building and working with stakeholders by Cal Wild and other organizations. President Obama had previously used his authority under the Antiquities Act to expand the California Coastal National Monument, to create the San Gabriel Mountains National Monument, and to create a small monument at the birthplace of famed labor activist Cesar Chavez. Miles of hiking and horseback riding trails, panoramic vistas, rugged mountains, ancient pine and fir forests, oak woodlands, grasslands, and important streams like Cache Creek are included in the new national monument. From 2001 to 2006, Cal Wild worked with Senator Barbara Boxer and Congressman Mike Thompson to establish or enlarge new wilderness areas in the region at Cedar Ruffs, Cache Creek, and Snow Mountain. So the new national monument will help protect the public lands around those wilderness areas as well. Once again, Congressman Thompson, with the assistance of Senator Boxer and Congressman John Garamendi, spearheaded the effort to get the region protected by both introducing bills in Congress and by urging President Obama to act if Congress would not. The Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service must now prepare a management plan for the Berryessa Snow Mountain National Monument detailing how they will protect the region's habitat, wildlife, recreation opportunities, and other values. If you'd like more information from the California Wilderness Coalition, please go to their website, www.calwild.org. That's www.calwild.org. And the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is seeking information related to flat-tailed horned lizards. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is seeking information relevant to a proposal to list the flat-tailed horned lizard as an endangered species in California. The flat-tailed horned lizard inhabits desert habitats in southeastern California, the extreme southwestern portion of Arizona, and the adjacent portions of northeastern Baja California Norte and northwestern Sonora, Mexico. The species has the smallest range of any horned lizard in the United States. Approximately one quarter of the flat-tailed horned lizard's range is in California, where it is confined to lower elevations throughout much of the Salton Trough, sections of eastern San Diego County, central Riverside County, and western and south central Imperial County. In June of 2014, the Center for Biological Diversity submitted a petition to the California Fish and Game Commission to formally list the flat-tailed horned lizard as endangered under the California Endangered Species Act. The listing petition described a variety of threats to the survival of flat-tailed horned lizards in California. These include direct and indirect impacts associated with agricultural, urban, and renewable energy development, on- and off-road vehicles, habitat fragmentation, barriers to movement, military training and border activities, non-native plants, and that all wonderful climate change. California Department of Fish and Wildlife recommended and the commission voted in to advance the species to candidacy on February 12, 2015. The commission published findings of this decision on February 24th, triggering a 12-month period during which the California Department of Fish and Wildlife will conduct a status review to inform the commission's decision on whether to list the species. As part of the status review process, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is soliciting information from the public regarding the species' ecology, genetics, life history, distribution, abundance, habitat, the degree and immediacy of threats to reproduction or survival, the adequacy of existing management, and recommendations for management of the species. Comments, data, or other information can be submitted in writing to California Department of Fish and Wildlife, Non-Game Wildlife Program, Attention Laura Patterson, 1812 9th Street, Sacramento, California, 95811. Let me repeat that address. California Department of Fish and Wildlife, Non-Game Wildlife Program, Attention Laura Patterson, 1812 9th Street, Sacramento, California, 95811. Or comments may be submitted by email to wildlifemgt@wildlife.ca.gov. That's wildlifemgt@wildlife.ca.gov. If submitting comments by mail, please include flat-tailed horned lizard in the subject heading. All comments received by September 14th will be evaluated prior to submission to the CDFW report to the Commission. A receipt of the report will be placed on the agenda for the next available meeting of the Commission after delivery, and the report will be made to the public at that time. Following the receipt of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife report, the Commission will allow a 30-day public comment period prior to taking any action on CDFW's recommendation. The Center for Biological Diversity's listing petition and CDFW's petition evaluation for the flat-tailed horned lizard are available at fgc.ca.gov/regulations/2014/ index.aspx, #FTHL. And I suppose you could find out more about that at the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, or maybe at, which is wildlife.ca.gov, or the Center for Biological Diversity can be found at biologicaldiversity.org. And speaking of the Center for Biological Diversity, let's dig into some of their news here. California's Mendocino County has suspended a contract with the Wildlife Killing Program. Around the same time that the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services released its kill data for 2014, California's Mendocino County, under pressure from the Center for Biological Diversity and Allied Groups, suspended the renewal of its contract with the Wildlife Services. The county's decision came after the coalition and a local resident sued it last fall for violating state law, requiring a full review of impacts of its Wildlife Services contract. In response, the county agreed to suspend its contract, pending an environmental review that will include looking at non-lethal predator control methods. Mendocino County's previous $142,000 contract authorized Wildlife Services to kill hundreds of coyotes, bears, bobcats, foxes, and other animals in the county without assessing the ecological damage or reviewing any less deadly alternatives. And four species, a fish, a snail, a turtle, and a tree, have moved closer to Endangered Species Act protection in response to legal work by the Center for Biological Diversity and its allies when the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service agreed that they may warrant protection. The Clear Lake Hitch, a large minnow that lives in Northern California, is threatened with dewatering and drought. The Mojave Shoulder Band Snail is threatened by an open-pit gold mine in its desert home. The Western Pond Turtle, a mostly river-dwelling species in Washington, Oregon, and California, is threatened by habitat destruction caused by agriculture and development. And the Yellow Cedar, threatened by climate change and logging, would be the first Alaska tree species protected by the Act. The futures of these species will be decided upon within the next year. An emergency protection has been sought for a rare Grand Canyon insect and flower. With development pressure intensifying on the Grand Canyon, the Center for Biological Diversity is taking action to protect two species found nowhere else on Earth but the canyon's wet seeps. Our emergency petition to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service seeks federal protections for the Arizona wet salts tiger beetle and McDougall's yellow tops, a flower in the aster family. Both little-known but important species are in danger from groundwater pumping to support massive new real estate developments planned for the tiny town of Tusayan near Grand Canyon National Park's South Rim. These developments would draw water from the same aquifer that feeds the springs that support these species, and since the developers have no plan in place to safeguard them, the beetle and flower will go extinct if they don't receive Endangered Species Act protections quickly. The Fish and Wildlife Service must act to protect these rare Grand Canyon species under the Endangered Species Act or will be at risk of losing an irreplaceable piece of our natural heritage, said Robin Silver, Center for Biological Diversity co-founder. And Republicans have unleashed a new attack on endangered species. Republicans in Congress launched a new round of assaults on the Endangered Species Act. The latest include eight bills in the U.S. Senate, including one that would eliminate federal protection for more than 800 endangered animals and plants around the country. The bills are strikingly similar to legislation introduced by Tea Party politicians in the House of Representatives last year that sought to weaken the scientific basis for protection decisions under the Act and limit public participation. Among the worst of the latest slew of bills is one from Senator Rand Paul, Republican from Kentucky, that would end protection for hundreds of species and require that all endangered species lose their protection every 5 years, regaining it only after a joint resolution in Congress. That sounds tough. In the past 4 years, Republicans have introduced more than 50 bills to weaken the Endangered Species Act and 100 bills going after individual species, said the Senator's Brett Hartle. These kinds of bills may please rich campaign donors, especially those exploiting the planet for profits, but they're way outside the mainstream. And a first-hand look at the destruction of mountaintop removal mining, Senator scientist Tierra Curry and Environmental Health Director Lorianne Bird have traveled to West Virginia recently to take part in the Preserving Sacred Appalachia Conference and tour mountaintop removal sites and Big Sandy Crayfish Habitat with local activists. They stop by the Cold River Mountain Watch office, which will be dedicated as the Judy Bond Center for Appalachian Preservation. Judy Bonds gained national attention for fighting to save her home from mountaintop removal coal mining before dying of cancer in 2011 at the age of 58. She was a waitress who took activism after she learned her grandson was playing in a creek of dead fish that had been poisoned by coal mining. "I believe in the purpose-driven life. I believe there is a glimmer of hope," Bonds once said. "Even if we can save just one mountain, even if we can save just something for our kids, I believe there's hope. My mommy always told me, you don't hump up in the corner, you get a lick in so that they know you've been in a fight. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a lick in so they know they've been in a fight." And a quote from Judy Bonds. Bonds' inspiring attitude lives on in the work to save people and wildlife of Appalachia. Go to the website www.biologicaldiversity.org for more information about protecting Appalachian crayfish and the people threatened by mountaintop removal. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The update. Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. If you'd like to listen to a rebroadcast of this show, or you just want to tune in tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. to hear me talk some more, you can do that right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 3 p.m. on Fridays. If you happen to be listening in Moscow, Idaho, tune in to 90.3 KRFP Radio Free Moscow at 9:30 p.m. on Monday nights. And as always, you can go to radioforall.net, and there you can listen online or download this or previous Earth First updates. I just want to take a mention that right now Free Radio is in dire need of a studio, so if you're in the Santa Cruz area and you know of a small, affordable studio space for Free Radio Santa Cruz for our legal studios, please send an email to frsc@freakradio.org. The Earth First Update is a presentation of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock for another edition of the Earth First Update.